I'm Fraser T. Smith, a music artist, record producer, musician and songwriter, and I've made an album called 12 Questions under the name Future Utopia. Each track on the record poses a deep philosophical question, and I've invited some of the sharpest minds in popular culture to answer these questions in order to help me and others navigate living in the modern world. In this episode, I welcome presenter, DJ and visionary Julie Adenuga and R&B superstar Craig David.
Is that what you need?
Oh, we can't hear it. Before, it's coming direct, okay, no, straight in. It was like a pew.
Let me turn some level up. Let's get a little vibe going.
Your setup is looking super hot. I really like it.
Julie, do you know the amount of plane journeys that I've been on with Craig?
What, just by accident or planned?
No. By design. We've traveled the world. We must have done how many shows, which we will get into soon. But what I was going to let you know was that if you ever see Craig on a flight and you're thinking, I need this adapter which will help my headphones adapt through into the seat where I can actually talk with the captain. Yeah, which you may think, well, why would we want to do that? Well, you might want to have that dialogue. Craig, in this bag that he carries, which literally a sound engineer had to carry. It was so heavy that it gave him a hernia on one. I did like that you jumped in quickly to say
the bag that Craig carried, because I was about to say, I wasn't really carrying that because I remember I got a hernia from that. So it definitely wasn't, you know what I'm saying?
That was a hernia to be had. I would love to say you travel light. Let's get straight to the intro. But I'm gonna introduce you first, Julie, because ladies first, as we all always
know. Thanks, babes. Cheers.
I am delighted that you both could come onto this 12 Questions podcast, and I cannot wait to hear your answers because they're going to be so illuminating, and I'm no doubt very funny as well as philosophical.
Yes,
Julie. So you are someone that I have had contact with, and my music has had contact with. We've met each other a few times, and you are someone that informs, educates, enlightens the public with your taste. You're a tastemaker. What does that mean? Someone that's really cool. Yes, you're really cool. But someone that listens to the scene and listens to culture and music and filters out the wheat from the chaff and shines a spotlight on incredible music. And I'm lucky enough that you have smiled on some music that I've been part of, that music that Craig's been part of, music that we've both been part of together, it's music that we've been part of separately. You are a gateway, a conduit of incredible music, and you enable us to have faith in the process, to put all that work, because if you're putting all that work in the studio and you're sweating over the Pro Tools or the keys or the lyrics or the vocals, and it's then entrusted into the hands of someone that doesn't really understand the music or is literally just looking at the commercial values, it's very soul destroying, and therefore culture becomes, it diminishes. So I just want to thank you for all the work that you do for not myself, but for culture and for music and for energy, because you're a spreader of the word of the gospel, and you're so important to what the musical landscape of this country and the world has to offer. You allow things to blossom. Wow. And I just want to thank you for that.
I had to look at the ground while she was talking because I was blushing, but thank you so much, Fraser.
It's real.
Yeah, I appreciate that. No one has ever articulated what I do in that way. And people ask me what I do sometimes, and I have never been able to articulate what I do in that way. So thank you. I'm going to take everything you just said, and that will be how I now introduce myself to people when they ask me who I am and what I do. Thank you so much.
It's from the heart.
Lovely.
Thank you.
I feel that.
Craig.
Oh, what's Craig's going to be? Oh, my goodness.
This is a personal one as well. Craig, the first thing to say is that there has not been before you, or I dare say will not be after you, a finer R&B singer in this country. To me, there won't be a finer human before or after you. This is very personal to me because actions speak louder, and you were the best man at our wedding.
No, totally.
You gave a speech 17 years ago that people still speak about to this day.
Wow.
You know, you left your mark on that wedding. in a way that almost made Sarah's dress, almost made the union of these two souls in some ways insignificant. You know, that is the kind of effect that you can have. You know, we can talk about the 5 billion streams, we can talk about the MBE, but I want to talk about the Craig that I've had more laughs with than anyone else on this planet. I've done more shows with you than anyone. I've had more musical connection with you in terms of all those shows and in the studio and out of the studio than anybody else on this planet. So to have you, for your love, your guidance, your support, your laughs, your humor and your wisdom through my life is just the blessing of all blessings, you know?
Wow. I mean, what can I say? The feeling is so mutual. It's one of those things that I feel like over the course of my life, I've been learning to receive. I think I would find that something like that would be so overwhelming that you'd want to just quickly throw it back and overwhelm someone back. And I've actually learned that it's like not receive is to not be able to really, it's like giving something back to someone's giving you a gift and you're like, no, you hold the thing. And you're like, so I can just say thank you, man. It really is so mutual. And you touched on something that I think was like so poignant, like the laughter that we have outside of music and things that we do and what we create, but I'm talking laughter, belly aching laughter, is something that is one of the most priceless things in my life. I think if you have that in any relationship, be it like your friend, it can be your partner, it can be a work colleague, whatever it is, you have that, it's an underlining tone that always will refresh you, enrich you, will make you feel like there's nothing more than this. And not like a laugh, that was a funny joke. I'm talking like crying, you're at home by yourself, still thinking about something that you were talking about days before, crying by yourself. I long for. So I'm grateful that I did meet you at the time that we met, because I feel like everything's always destined. I'm just grateful for you, man.
It's a beautiful thing. I'm so grateful to you both. I'm just going to kick things off. Mm. And we have 12 questions to get through, right?
Okay.
I don't want that to sound like a chore. It's not. It's going to be fun. What I want to say is that sometimes you can look at these questions and go, wow, that's so deep. But honestly, like, what happens next can be as simple as, well, I'm going to go down and make myself a smoothie.
You're in charge, Fraser. I'm down for whatever.
Okay.
Lovely. So, lovely.
Julie, fear or faith?
Okay. I think first I've got to work out what faith means to me. Because I was taught it means religion. And I wouldn't say that I'm a religious person. So faith to me is belief in something that isn't a material or physical thing. So with that in mind, fear or faith, it's weird. I would pick fear because fear is almost the thing that happens first before the faith kicks in. In most instances in my life that I can think of, I had a fear of something and I had to decide whether I was going to use faith or I was going to give in to the fear. But the fear always came first. It was the catalyst for whatever the journey became in my life. So, my question to you is, when you're saying fear or faith, are you asking me which one I like or which one is important or which one is dominant? What's the second half of your question that you didn't ask?
That's a good question. I think with these questions, they just exist. You know, they just stand there.
I knew you were going to say that.
They're there for you to interpret it. It's like art. I guess you look at it and it's going to be one thing to one, but there's no
answer to my question. No. I knew you were going to say that. I knew
But I love that you, with a lot of these questions, what I've found is that division and connection and nurture and nature, there's something in the middle, which is this point, which is actually rather than the polarizing effect of going one way or the other. And that's really interesting what you say. And I guess, Craig, before we went on stage at Live 8, I remember Colin, your manager, saying, we've just got the feed. We've got the feed. And we went on after U2. And we were thinking, you know, there was just a casual, like, this is going out to kind of a billion people, guys. So just make sure that guitar's like nicely tuned. And Craig, your mic's
gonna warm up one more time.
It was a moment. And I guess we stood together at that point on the edge, right in the middle of fear and faith, because we have faith in each other. We had faith in music, in our abilities. But there, to say there was no fear would be denying that side. Would you agree with that, Craig?
Yeah, you know, I think you hit it right. Exactly what you said, Julie, in terms of when you wanted to reframe the question, like what is the, you actually answered it when I was taking from what you said. You actually were answering it perfectly because they're one of the same.
Mm.
Like without the fear, you're not going to ever overcome any obstacles in life,
right,
because you're just
right.
Like, if I've got it, I know what it is. If if there's not left, there's not right. If there's not up, there's not down. You need the opposite to give you a reference point as to where things are. So going on stage, it's like, I think in that one in particular, when you said phrase, it was like there was a deeper confidence in us. There was something that kind of, even though our head would say fear of how many people, but then the other part of our head would say, no, but we're confident. We know we've done this for years. We've got this locked down. I think there's a greater sort of greater power, whatever you want to call it. You can be a God force. You can be universe. Could be like whatever it is, your thing that channels through you, that takes you over. And it's like, no, you actually are in that middle point. You actually are the thing that the head is trying to give you a reference point of, that's fear, that's faith, or this. It's trying to give you the opposites. That's how it works. It needs duality to kind of give you, whereas there's a deeper feeling when you go on, you hit the chord and you're like, oh, I don't need to think about this. It's like the fear and the anxiety and the confidence are all in one, encapsulated. And I feel like that those moments, the more you kind of notice that actually you can't separate the negative from the positive of a magnet. You can keep shaving it off, but it's still negative, and that's how a magnet works. But if you are the magnet, you realize, okay, this is both sides of me. I have this in my life. Sorry to spin this one out completely, like to some next like place, but it just feels to me that from what you're saying, a lot of the answers to the questions are actually, they are both. And it's just what your perception is of the take of it.
You know, there's a name for that. You know, there's a name for what that is, that bit in the center. And they ruined it. It's called the X Factor, but they ruined it and made it into a weird talent show. But that is like, that's what it is. It's the magic. But now that when you think of X Factor, you think of X Factor, but actually it's that thing that has no name, but it's magic. It's the center.
I love that. It got me thinking when we were saying about the faith that we had when we went on stage. It just took me back to just over a year ago, or 2 years ago. When was the Brits?
It was 2020.
Where could we go out? That was last year. You can relate to this, Craig, as a performance point of view, and obviously Julie, of course, but from a point of view of me never playing piano before,
right,
on this stage with Dave, and me wanted to be there at the Brits to support him and to play piano. But piano is not the first instrument. Piano is not really any instrument to me. I mean, I play the piano, but not I don't play the piano. The only way I could override the overwhelming anxiety of going on that stage and absolutely warping out and flopping that whole performance in front of all those people when Dave was just rapping on such an important subject and the whole intensity of that, all I could think of doing, and I did this when I was rehearsing, was just to say thank you. I must have said it over the course of the rehearsals and the performance a million times.
Wow.
Because I felt that connected me with a point that was, because sometimes I looked, if I stepped out of that thanks and that gratitude, I would look at the piano keyboard and I'd literally forget everything that was, even though like we wrote that together, it was like a foreign kind of thing. And we've had this, haven't we, Craig, where you could go blank on a lyric, even though you've sung a song a million times. Suddenly it's just, you're in that point where you're looking at yourself going, I've literally just warped out.
Oh yeah, it's out. Have both of you seen the Pixar movie Soul? Have you got to see it, yeah? So I think they do a really beautiful visual description of how when you're in the zone, you're in flow. But as soon as you start to think, and we've had this especially like when a red light goes on at a live lounge, and it's like you're, prior to that, we're calm, it's vibing, everyone's flowing. As soon as it's like, okay, we're on live, everyone's get rigid, lights on, now you know. The thing is, you can easily start to warp out to the point where you actually are in someone else's house, sitting down listening to on their radio. You're so far from it, you're like, I'm listening to this, but actually I'm the one who's got to perform it. I don't know the lyric. I sang it 20,000 times before. that disconnect is crazy. So your thank you was almost like your mantra that light
to
brought
keep
you back.
You in that
yeah,
space,
let me stay
yeah.
In here and yeah. man.
But it's awareness. It's the yeah. awareness. I have the exact same thing. I interviewed Giggs the other day, and Giggs and I have conversations all the time. You know, I love his energy because he's just he's like someone that can't lie almost. His energy is very pure. It is exactly what it is, and he is exactly who he is. And I'm sitting across from him, and he's talking to me, and I cannot. It's almost like there's like a small Julie inside my brain that is putting her hands up and blocking the information that she knows I need for when he stops talking. And she's playing this weird game with me of like, the more you try to work out what you want to say, the more I'm going to block this information from you. And I have to remember that I can do my job. Yeah. And then she goes away. But the minute I become aware that I'm doing something, even though I love it and I'm passionate about it, that's when, yeah, it's so strange. Awareness shouldn't make you blank out, but it almost does. And you have to go into that zone where it just is the natural thing that you do for it to really flow and for it to work. I'm going to try that thank you method, Fraser.
So just you do get onto a like an elevated state.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's definitely recommend it. There's some great answers.
By the way, you were amazing on that, by the way. Just to cap that off.
Sensational.
It was incredible. Absolutely. I mean, it was like you're giving the insight as to how you were feeling and what your mantra you were saying to keep you in the zone. But the feeling when you're watching it on TV at home, you were like, wow, this is a synergy between you and Dave that was epic. Mm-hmm. And it was actually even the visual was as good as that was. You were so, every note, every key you're pressing, the nuance of Dave's vocal, it was a synergy in that moment. That's why it was so powerful. That's why it connected. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, for a performance like that, there's so much that you could have done that could have taken away from the performance, even something subtle. But for whatever reason, and maybe for that mantra, you did and were exactly what that performance needed for it to be what we now remember of it. And that's not easy. Watching it was beautiful, but I can imagine being in it is probably and was probably a very different experience.
Yes, very, very
So
powerful.
Congratulations.
Very powerful moment. I mean, I spoke to someone the other day and they said, oh, I didn't realize it was you. I just thought that David got like this classical composer because it was a Beethoven type of guy that was looking I hadn't had time. Well, it was in lockdown, it wasn't in lockdown. Pre-lockdown, excuse. I've been making my album, and I don't know. I just let my hair grow because I just hadn't had the time. So I had this sort of like slightly graying, like long Beethoven-y sort of thing. And when I was looking it back, I didn't think about this at the time. I was wearing this kind of suit, and it made me look like some kind of ancient classical composer. But if that's what it needed.
Channel Beethoven, man. I mean, if you're going to channel him, him. I mean, now you're going to play well. So
yeah, it's true.
Congratulations on the look and the sound.
Craig, how much is enough?
Okay, let me give two contexts. So I'd say in terms of being comfortable and having enough food on your plate, roof over your head, clothes on your back, the bare minimal is really needed. Comfort is something that I've realized from growing up in a council flat with my mum to then being able to afford some of the things as simple as a pair of trainers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, it was like, I used to save up my £70 to get my first Nike Huaraches. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. And to be in a position now where I could buy a few of them. Mm. It's funny that I don't appreciate them the same way that I did when I was the kid who got them the one pair, you know. Absolutely. It's like you get 2-3 and it's like, I used to scrub them with a brush and I'd have the whitener and I'd be doing the whole thing, take the laces out, wash them, put them back in. I mean, it was a whole thing going on. Yeah.
The routine.
We were in, it was a different kind of love. But then I've realized over the course of my life is that I like lovely things. That's fine. Goes without saying that you can like lovely things and you can buy lovely things, but then there's a point at which there's excess. And if you can channel that back in and then be of service and to find ways to distribute money, if I'm using money as a context, you have to keep it moving. And it's like there's enough for my needs, and then there's excess. And I think I've found a balance now where I realize, okay, cool, I can have lovely things, but I can still you can distribute this correctly. Mm-hmm. But then I would say that there's one thing that always kind of like, there's always that nagging feeling that you get of, is it ever enough because of creativity? I think you always kind of like, could I do that thing? Could I try that thing? And I think that's almost an expression. That's a good thing. That's one of the things that as human beings, you want to be creative. You're finding different ways to be nuanced ways to be creative. And if you haven't got creativity, that's where you start to fall into a bit of a spiral of depression, because it doesn't matter how creative it is, but some form of creativity, that means I'm going to play, I'm going to get down with my kids and we're going to vibe. It's going to be creative with this. We're going to, without that, you would have found this lockdown to be very, very tough, mm-hmm. because creativity in this time has been like play to get you through, for me mentally, personally. But I do feel that there's always that you want a bit more, and I'm happy for that, because without that, I feel I could easily get lost in excess. You then go to start buying things and doing, that gets back into doing, buying, and trying to find ways to connect. But actually, the only real connection is with yourself. You're like, that's enough. Can you sit with yourself and quiet? Cool. But can you also be creative when you haven't got things to do? There's nothing to do. There's nowhere you can go today. But can you still find creativity? So I think that it's kind of a pull between the two.
I feel like when I'm listening to you both talk, I've transported to a mountain in Tibet. And I'm just sitting there with two.
You know, this is a screensaver, by the way. I'm actually on the mountain. Like, this is literally one of the things that comes on this thing. It looks like a London, like you've got the studio. I'm on there. That's why I've got the hoodie and everything, because it's a bit cold up here.
That's what I needed to know. Julie, do we really care?
Oh, my goodness. Do we really care? Bruv. You come off the mountain now, because it's good. You need to come to Tottenham for this answer. Do we really care? I have this beef every day, and I go into this deep thought, because I feel like I've lived two lives. And when I look at, similarly to what Craig was just saying, when I look at my two lives that I've lived, and I think about what I cared about the most in those lifespans or time spans, it scares me how much I cared about things that I now don't care about. And it scares me how much I don't care about things, or vice versa, whatever that vice versa is. It worries me, because it unsettles me, because it makes me think that my foundation can and always will change. It's a podcast, so you guys can't see, but behind me, there's some writing on the wall that I got into the other day with a Sharpie for my fresh white walls in my flat. Nice. Because I was struggling to find my footing, just in a personal way. And so I was looking into meditation, and one of the mantras that I saw and have been using recently is, I am not the body, I am not even the mind. Mm. I didn't understand it for ages. What's that mean? I'm not the body, I'm not even the mind. And in this meditation, I say it over and over again for about 4 minutes. So what does that mean? What does that mean? And researching into it and reading into it and looking into it, it is, you know, you are not your physical body. It's a vessel for your spirit and your soul. But you're not even your mind. So that lifetime I lived when I was growing up in Tottenham with three brothers, my mum and my dad, who were born in Nigeria, who raised four kids in England, had no idea what they were doing, you know, didn't understand how British culture worked, didn't have a lot of money, got us into creative stuff because that was the only way to keep us busy, because we were so vibrant and loud. And, you know, I didn't like to get in my mum's car when she picked me up from school, because it was a mini and it was really embarrassing. And that was the biggest issue of my life at the time. And, you know, not feeling like all the black girls in my school, but also not feeling like the Turkish and Greek Cypriot girls and Greek girls in my school, and being all these things that were the biggest issue of my day, to now I wake up in my own house with a roof over my head, with any food choice I'd like, you know, with equipment everywhere for anything I want to create, record video. It's like everything in my mind at 16, now at 32 going on 33, just doesn't exist anymore. So when I think about if I care, I'm like, what am I supposed to care about? What is it? Am I supposed to care about now? Or am I supposed to think about what I might care about in 10 years and start caring about that now? Like, what am I supposed to care about? And that's just me as one singular person. So then when I extend that thought onto the billions of humans around the world, do we really care? My genuine answer, no. I think the answer is no. I think we care because we think we have to care. But in reality, I don't think we care. I just think there's nothing else to do. And I think if we all come to terms with the fact that there's nothing else to do, then it gets scary. I think humanity becomes scary because we're not solid in anything anymore. You know, nothing is a constant, nothing is certain. And I think everybody living on that ethos is a worrying thing because it's chaos and it's a lawless place at that point. And so I think we have to be told, or we have to feel like we should care, to give ourselves some kind of stability and foundation. But the human mind is a very scary place. That's just like a window into my thoughts. And so writing things on the wall sometimes is just a nice way to recenter myself because, yeah, the rabbit hole of care and morals and understanding and the future and the past is a podcast series in itself, I think.
It's a powerful answer, though.
That's amazing.
Really powerful. So much food for thought in there. Craig, for someone whose name is synonymous with incredible music around the world, what's in a name?
One, by the way, I know you guys are a bit of a curveball, but that feeling that you had when you were in the getting picked up by your mum in the car. My mum used to pick me up in a Fiat Uno, yeah. We had like, and there were little stickers on the side with bullet holes, yeah. That was the added little touch to it. I don't know where she got it from. That was what I was getting picked up when I was going to clubs as well. When I was like trying to do like some 2 a.m. Mum said, I can only go if she picks me up. I feel you. So that's just, I just didn't know.
Why didn't
that.
You take the bullet hole stickers off? That's my question.
Because I took
that
off, the door would have come off. It was one of the ones where you take that off, is the paint's coming off, the door is like, just leave the thing and just put it down and just open the door and get
I'm
out.
I'm glad I wasn't the only one. So, and for anyone going through that now, it gets better.
Yeah, yeah, trust, I got you. Sorry. So to answer your question, Fraze, I would say that when you have a name, it can build up a load of self-identities that are attached to the name. And I think that what I've found, especially that's been exacerbated through having success, is that the name holds a certain vibration and people associate certain ways with that name. How I act with that name. What does that represent? Where does it sit? Where does it not sit? What can it do? What can it can't do? So it starts to become quite rigid into what it is. And because as a human being, and I talk about creativity before, you're flowing. You're like water. You're moving. You're malleable. So you're moving. So one day you might be and want to be on the top of the Himalayas, but at the same time you might want to be in the club like with a drum and bass tune and just be like, you know what I mean? I'm not saying drum and bass and Himalayas don't go together, but I'm just saying, you know what I mean? Like you might just want to throw a little 808 bass, but then when you're Himalayas, you might want to just go a little bit more tranquil. We can go both ways, but I think with names, they can sometimes lock you in. And I feel that there is a lot of impetus put on somebody's name. And then what happens, you can tend to want to live up to that name as opposed to living up to your real truth.
Yes, 100%.
And that it resonated with what you said earlier, Julie, about how two different versions of you and knowing that there's possibly many more versions of you that are going to change and what do you care about, is that I realized that, yes, there's a quote-unquote Craig David that's this, but there's another whole side to me that probably I've never really shown because maybe I was a bit too vulnerable because that's not the Craig David everyone knows. So you repress that side of you. Only your closer friends know that side, but that's the one that you get your most fun and joy from. You just stick in your role of this. And I had to, lockdown has been an amazing catalyst to break out and be like, my thing is I've got to have to open up and be all of me. And I think being able to have a variety of being able to have these kind of conversations, which can go a little bit deeper, I love, because I feel that kind of, it allows me to access that part of me that I guess in interviews you can be a bit locked into. What's your record sales? What chart positions did you do? How many records sell? Right. What are you promoting right now? What's the it? And I like what you do, Judy. You go deeper with people, and I feel that that's the new vibe. So sorry, slightly digressing, but the name holds a lot of weight, and I know that you've got to break that mold of realizing that you're evolving, and the name has to not box you in and allow yourself to continually be a free spirit that evolves. But how do you feel about that, both of you? Because, I mean, you both have names that are very successful, very well known. Mm. How do you feel about that? I mean, how's that?
Something that I put into practice a lot is introducing myself wherever I go. Doesn't matter where I am. It doesn't matter if I think people already know who I am.
Mm. Great.
And I introduce myself because I think operating under the assumption that people know you and sort of understand who you are and your personality just because they know your name is troublesome. I think it's problematic. And so if I introduce myself to you and I'm maybe somber that day, I think it automatically puts you into a place where, oh, I've got to actually get to know this person, regardless of what I thought of her before, what I thought of her name before, you know, what I know of her and what I've seen of her. Because she's not being this person that I assume she was, I now have to make an effort to get to know her. And so me introducing myself to you is my way of saying, I'm open to that. What's your name? And let's start this interaction from zero. I think that's something that I have pushed into my work a lot as well. From meeting anyone like Pharrell Williams or Alicia Keys, I'll still give it the, hey, how are you? I'm Julie. And I don't expect them to say, hi, I'm Alicia Keys. But I will enter that conversation and interaction with anybody, especially in an interview, with at zero. And I'm not going to assume anything about you. You know, Tyler the Creator, I'm not going to assume you're going to be a loud, crazy, funny guy on the day that I meet you. I'm going to give you an opportunity to tell me who you are. And I hope that people get that when they speak to me, because that's something that's really important to me, is to allow people to be exactly who they are, regardless of what they think the interaction is going to be beforehand.
Totally.
It's a great way to be.
Totally, that's a
great way to be. Julie, why are we divided when we're so connected?
Say that again, so the words go inside my mind.
Why are we divided when we're so connected?
Ah, Fraser. All of these questions are impossible. Why are we divided when we are so connected? So, you know why that question is annoying? Because it's probably one of my biggest pet peeves is that. I remember growing up and getting on the tube and sitting on the tube and thinking, why is no one? Why are people not speaking to each other? We're stuck inside a tube together, guys. We all are hot. We're all irritated. We're all, you know, like we've all got something to do today. We've got so much in common right now in this one tube. And no one is saying anything. It's so weird. And this was early days before people were on phones constantly. This is when I was doing the Sudoku in the evening Standard newspaper at the back for free. And but it has always annoyed me. It has always been irritating for me. I've grown up within community. Doesn't matter where. If there's more than two people in the room, if there's more than one person in the room, sorry, we're having a conversation. Whether there's one or 50 of us, we're all going to talk about whatever we've got in common right now and why we're stuck in this place together. I say stuck. I don't mean stuck, just in this room. And so to see us now, you know, I'll post about not having a personal assistant, and someone who lives in New Jersey will comment back and say, I've got one. I found one. She's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And I'm like, see, you know, like to see us now be in a place where people don't take advantage of that in a positive way is honestly one of the things that pisses me off the most about this entire existence on this planet. And I think the reason that we're so divided is because everybody's very scared about who they really are. And so when we get into a place where we can be connected, instead of people being open about who they really are, they're hiding it. And so it divides us because people think that no one else is like them, even though there's so many examples of how we are all exactly the same. And I also feel like in the instances where people show us that they are normal and like us, we shun them for it and we make them feel bad about it. And we pretend as if we're not like that as well, because we all have this need for some reason to feel like we're better than each other or we're on some kind of higher ground to everybody else. Yeah, I can't count the amount of times that I've been open about an experience in a room of people and the amount of people that have gone, oh my gosh, me too. And I'm just like, yeah, that's this perfect examples of just the fact that we are so similar. I wish people on the tube, to in the office, at wherever you are, were just super, super honest and real about who they are. You know, we're just all flawed. We're all trying to work this thing out and we're really bad at it sometimes. And sometimes we have wins and it's great and we celebrate them. And yeah, we're humans.
Do you guys think, talking about the tube and those social interactions, do you guys think that after June the 21st, after this period of lockdown, that there will be, I mean, I'd love to think that there would be this period of hopefully long-lasting change where people have way more acceptance and people have so much more kindness and people are just really pleased to be in each other's company? Or do you think it's something that will maybe like you'll be hugging a random stranger in the street on the June 21st, and then on the 2nd you're just like, what's that weirdo doing? Get off me, I'm calling the police.
I think it's going to be the latter.
Okay.
You know what, it's funny because that was a great, I mean, your answer, Judy, was wicked. I mean, there's a lot of questions for why are we so disconnected when we know what connects us. I mean, you take away hugging from everyone and you saw how disconnected we are. Where I'm very tactile anyway. So it was like, for me, it was like, I'm doing a dance with someone, you know, like you're getting, like, they're coming in for the hug and I'm like, no, I can't. And she's an old lady and she's tearing up and you want to go for the hug. And now we got to go back. And it's just like, whoa, I was doing the salsa. I was like, wow, I'm moving differently. I say, wow. Okay. So this is how it is. So I know, like, something like that, as simple as that, but there's a huge disconnect. But to answer your thing, phrase,
because I got this image of you with that wasn't when you were collecting your MBE, was it? Because you can say if the old lady you were trying to hug was...
We didn't get the chance, but if that was, you would have seen that. That would have been a meme. It would have been me. Okay. That would have been amazing. I would have been moving forward. I would have said, wow, this is not what I want to be doing, but it feels good, right? And she's looking at you like, yeah, it kind of feels good, God. But I know that we've got to lock this off now.
I would have had a field day trying to find a song to match to the video.
Oh, trust me.
That would be a salsa. Because it would have been salsa,
so many.
Right?
That's the thing. It would have gone viral. There'd be so many tunes over it. Every tune you can think of. No, it's good. It's a good question. Now, she's a lovely lady, very close to me, like a neighbor who's just like, she just wanted to do it. She's lonely. She wants some time. And you're just like, do you want to go over and just like, ah, even though we did a salsa, if you saw it, man, it was crazy. It was like an in, out. It's like, wow. It's like merengue. It wasn't like salsa. It moved differently. And I was saying, wow. And I was thinking, I got to go back in my house because this ain't the one. People, I've got feeling that come, say, June 21st, or come at a time where we feel like we can really just get back to it. I feel that there'll be a little bit of disappointment in terms of, it'll be like a New Year's Eve celebration. Mm. You want to go all out. Some will go all out. We're talking like drink in excess, do everything in excess. Like we're free. Let's go all out and just rinse it. Yeah. And that's fine. I mean, you want to celebrate. You've been locked down. I get it. It's an expression of freedom. But because you'll go on there thinking, oh, everyone's got it. We got it. We're back. Oh, man. We're in, like almost the hippie. There was 70s. Oh, wow. We could vibe, 60s. We could vibe. No. Same tube. Same nonsense will go on. Same thing, yeah? But hopefully you will be like, you know what? I got this. I'm good. I'll say a hi. I ain't going to get a response from you. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. I'll be
still
that
try.
One. Yeah. Someone's going to shut me down, but we're cool.
This flows in nicely to the next question, Craig.
Hit it.
How do we find our truth?
Wow, on the tube.
on the Victoria line.
You'll learn everything you need to do in the tube. Okay, how do we find our truth? Do you know what? It doesn't feel like it's a heady, thinky thing. It's your truth is how your action is how you present yourself. We always have we've all got our own way of thinking what is my truth, and we'll try and define it and we'll put words to it. And it's okay, it sounds good. It's almost like having you can have a spiritual ego, you know, you can have that one. Oh, I'm a spiritual one. Oh, wow. So flex spiritually. I'm doing these weird moves. I don't know if we're using any visual for this, but there's a lot of this.
We are now.
Movements, but like, wow. It's like, is he doing dance? We could put some dance or to this. Like, is he doing that Mr. Loverman thing or is he doing this merengue? Sorry. But there is this. I've got a question now. Hit me back with a question. Find our truth. There you go. My truth then was a good example. I got lost in the moment. My truth was that I was flowing.
Yes.
Then I came back to the question. I forgot what it was. I got to think of it. I got to answer it. Like, come with the right answer because you're on a podcast. You got to come right.
You just played it. I want to tell you now, Craig, and it's relevant because this isn't something that's every single person that's on the podcast. But I talked to Kano earlier.
And how is he?
Amazing.
Right.
Really good. And you too, we've collaborated together. We've had fun together. Kane was at the wedding as well. Mm. With yourself and Kane, you are two people that I've found my truth with either on stage or in the studio, or just losing myself with Kane on the MPC, with me playing the keys or him in the booth, me recording, me on guitar, you singing, us having fun, us laughing. And it's, to me, that's like the gift of music has been the gift of truth. Like that, wow. that is my truth. I lose myself. I lose track of time. I lose all sense of reality really within that. And not in a way that is forced. It's literally with certain people. And that's a huge, huge blessing.
I love that. You know, because music is a great, you know how much of an amazing teacher music is? I mean, exactly the same way. Is that if I could run my relationships like I am in the studio, oh my God. Like, you know what? That beat's not really the one.
Mm.
I feel no way about it. Mm. You can come straight out with it. But if it was a close intimate, you're going to swerve around the corner, go over here to left. In the studio, it's like, great, that note's not the one. But okay, can you do that? Another take on that. Okay, cool. There's a real balance and a give and take. And it's like, okay, positive criticism is taken and it's mm-hmm. well received. And we've all got a common goal. We all want to grow together. We want this song to be great. That's why it's such a joy. You know what I mean? Man, I'm like, wow, if I could just say the way I say it when we're here. I'm like, why are you going around the houses to say that the food ain't tasting right?
What food was it, Craig? What food was it? Do you remember?
Do you know
what
I think?
What was it?
Let me. It was a basic one, yeah. It was a salad runnings, yeah. But it was just that. It was just it didn't have enough salt. It just needed one little shot of salt. One little hit. And it was so it's a bit bland. And I just couldn't. Yeah. There was grace. There was grace in it. Grace is another big one. To hold grace. Do you need to? In this case, yeah, because yes. It will give me enjoyment, and the person who made that would enjoy to know that. Oh, you're enjoying it. Mm. But instead, I didn't say anything. You don't say anything. I'm not really enjoying it. You're thinking I'm having a great time. We're all lying to each other. It's a joke, man.
Look how Craig stressed out over a salad. I love it. I love it.
I've seen that.
Anyway, we had a little Himalayan and everything was cool. So we went back to the Himalayas and we were calm.
Julie, what's the cost of freedom?
Oh, the cost of freedom is everything. Everything.
Okay.
It's every single thing is the cost of freedom. It's every element. It's every physical. It's every spiritual. It's everything is the cost of freedom, which is why very few people actually have it, if any. I don't think anyone has it because we are still yet to work out how to get everything into one space and then give it to people all at the same time. I don't think humanity will ever be able to do that. Which is a sad thought, but I think is definitely a reality.
Mm.
I love that answer.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant.
So it's the shortest answer, but the was that the most profound? Poignant.
Yeah,
that's food for thought on there. Though. Craig, yeah. Is it too late to save the planet?
Nah, I feel that there's a greater power at hand that's. Mother Earth, if you just like look at the Earth and look at what she provides. I mean, we're talking like our air. I mean, our ecosystem kind of like runs from the air, the water, and we're made of 90% water, 80% water. So that therefore, there's what she provides is our lifeline. So
I don't mean to keep cutting you, Craig, but I'm only going to cut you when there's a relevant
please
interjection. But I would say, did you say 70? We are 70% water.
Yeah, it might be something different.
I would put you at 85. No, Julie. That's so I have sweet. Seen this man. You know,
so sweet. Stay with the sweet before he's got, because look at when he does a straight face like that, yeah, right?
No.
I'm seeing something from the supermarket.
Some kind of Higgy Haggers about to come in. Yeah, let's hear it.
You know those bags that I said Craig had every adapter? Like literally, we used to call him Dixon's. Craig wow. Dixon's, because I mean, if you needed anything, it's like going to Dixon's.
That's brilliant.
Anything.
Yeah. So, that's but genius. Within that was a huge amount of water, Because I was like, wow, this has got heavy, Craig. And Craig, Richard, you'd come to the studio recently, and I go, wow, these bags haven't got any lighter. And you say, yeah, well, I need to keep hydrated. I've literally seen Craig drink, I'd say, 6 liters of water.
Look at his skin, Fraser.
Session. No, that's what I'm saying.
Look at his skin.
I said, if people say to me, what about Craig? You know, how is he? I said, Craig has the hardest working kidneys in show business. I mean, literally, those guys are flushing out those toxins. Look at you. You are backwards and forward to that bathroom, in and out of the booth, bathroom again, another litre, back. And that just, you're 85%, 90% water, man. That's why you look so good.
I feel you're right. But do you see how I could see? It started off sweet. See, it's
sweet. Yeah, where it's
sweet.
Sweet. Yeah.
Where did it go sour?
It's very sweet, but it where did it go sour? The faces go straight, yeah? And there's no expression for a moment, yeah?
Yeah.
And then it comes and it comes well. Yeah. Delivery is fantastic. That's what I love about you, Fraser. That's why I love you so much, because you deliver on task, on point, at the right time, and catch everyone off guard.
The hardest working kidneys in the game.
It's show business.
You know what? You got keep. I mean, 6 liters is a lot, but definitely keep hydrated because it will. I found it definitely helped.
I just don't like drinking loads of water because I can't bother to keep going toilet. Women, it's long, guys. You're taking your clothes off to go toilet every 5 minutes. It's just hell.
I can imagine that's super long as well. Yeah. I can imagine. So yeah. So maybe ease it back on 6 liters, but definitely.
But you were
hydrated.
Saying. We are 70% water, except you.
70% water, except me, maybe just a touch more, as Fraser explained. But the planet just offers so much. And I just feel that it's just a real shame that we don't treat her with the respect that she deserves. Because there's companies I like who are planting a tree for everyone that they cut down. Or it's balance for me. But I don't feel that the world will come to an end anytime soon. I don't feel that we've got... I hope we get a bit more mindful.
There's a wonderful stand-up from George Carlin that you guys should check out. I think his name's George Carlin, where he talks about how, you know, human beings are constantly trying to save the planet. And he's like, the planet's fine. It's us that's going. We're gonna be out of here. But the planet will be perfectly fine.
Totally.
So I guess the question should be, is it too late to save humanity? That's the real question.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Go and change your album, Fraser.
We'll go back. Judy, what happens next?
Oh my goodness. What happens next? My brothers just had kids. Well, I say just, they're going to be 3 this year. And they always remind me that we're just going to keep going. Every time I think about my experiences, and I believe they're the only experiences that exist, I remember that there's these 2 little girls called Rose and River. And they're going to be 3. And everything that I know about life means nothing to them. They've got their own version of everything that's going to happen when they turn 16, when they turn 30, when they're 60. It's just a whole new... I never understood generations until they came into this world. So I guess the answer is, what happens next is everything. Everything happens next. We're just all going to experience it in different ways. And I'm really looking forward to my 40s and my 50s and my 60s and so on. I can't wait to see what happens in those parts of my life. And I'm so excited about looking at Rose and River when they're 25 and seeing their lives. Nice. And really getting a strong grip on how beautiful life is and just how much it has to offer. Mm. And experiencing that as much as I can through different people's lenses. Whether it be my parents, my brothers, or my nieces. I'm very excited about what happens next.
Love that.
It's interesting that I wanted to ask you the next question, Judy, and that flows from family into nature or nurture. And I love just a bit of background on your upbringing and how the incredible creative work, you already touched on it because you said your parents with you and your brothers were...
Yeah.
Gave you that creative outlet, but how much of that was nature and how much do you believe is nurture?
I think my mum wrote a book about her life last year, and it was, I spent a lot of time with her basically publishing it, self-publishing it, or co-publishing it, I should say. And it helped me understand exactly why I am the way I am. It's a really wonderful thing. I think if you ever get the opportunity to, anyone listening, speak to your parents, they are people. They're not just your parents. They have whole lives that existed way before you. And it's really beautiful to just hear them speak about their own story. And I realized that my brothers and I, my 3 brothers, we are an extension of our parents, an exact extension of my dad's. Everything my dad has ever done has come from necessity, his entire life. Necessity is the mother of all creation, I think, was made because of my dad, because he is the guy that creates stuff from necessity. And my mum would have been a radio presenter if she grew up in a world where that was an option. 100%. She talks for England just like me. And well, she talks for Nigeria, I should say. but yeah, I would say the nurture side of it, it tips a little bit for me because of how much I've learned now that my parents are embedded in us in ways that I never ever realized. And, you know, growing up in Tottenham in an estate, being the only girl, going to school in Enfield where there weren't a lot of black people. And, you know, I spent a lot of time with my Greek and Turkish friends. And I wasn't doing the quote unquote official black things. I was talking about being an alt black girl the other day and how, you know, I grew up and I loved indie music and I didn't know how to do my hair. And I was more concerned with just playing with scare electrics. And I cried when I got a Barbie for Christmas or a birthday or whatever it was. I just was a very left version of what I assumed I was always going to be. The nature side of it comes into it a little bit, but the actual genetics of my family and my mum and dad specifically, I think I would be nowhere near this person if I took away that nurture but kept the environment the same. I'd be nowhere near. Just even the way I think, I sometimes look at my brother Jamie and I'm just like, we are exactly the same person. You know, people always like, oh, you got Jamie's face. I'm like, no, we've also got the same mind as well, by the way. We've got the exact same mind. It's scary to be quite honest. But yeah, I love the nurture side of things. I think it's so important. I love the fact that we pass things down to our offspring or, you know, to our friends even without knowing sometimes. I think that's such a beautiful thing because it makes me want to be a better person because I'm aware of how much I'm knowingly and unknowingly passing on to others. I think nurture for me will always.
That's powerful for you because, like I said before, you know, you're a gateway, you're an educator, and you're someone that enlightens people. So you are nurturing people all the time. You know, it's nurturing. Craig, what matters most?
I think you show up as your authentic self. I think if you can show up, because it kind of touches on a lot of things that we spoke about earlier on, about like why we're disconnected is because we don't show up. So we don't show all of our sides. If I could just show up authentically, and it's not as easy as everyone says. You know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, you can read an affirmation and it says show up, but that means really you're going to go up against status quo and you're going to have to, and it doesn't mean it's like you're not going to learn from it. There's some saying it doesn't mean like your truth doesn't mean that you're right. That's the thing. Like,
oh my gosh,
you might just say something and you learn from it. You're like, wow, I actually got called out heavily and I've actually can accept that I was wrong in that and I've learned from it. So it's not so much truth, but showing up authentically to say, look, I made my mistake authentically. I gave my best in the moment and that's all you can ever do. Do you know what I mean? And it wasn't for anyone else. It was just being an authentic version of me at this time. Because I can look back at my previous self and say, you know what? I know when I showed up authentic there because look at the action that came of it. And hindsight's a beautiful thing. We can look at when you showed up authentically, look where it got you. You locked off a relationship of some sort. You were authentic. You knew it wasn't working. Look how you feel free now and you're not like anything. Or you're in something that you knew wasn't authentic and wasn't right. And you're feeling like, I knew at the time that and you're feeling it now. Hindsight is a beautiful litmus test. You can use that and say, okay, well, look how it's done over a period of time. Mm-hmm. Especially like I'm 39 now, so you have a few runs of the cycle and you start to get to the point where, okay, cool, I'm a young man, but this phase, I got to show up. Because then in 10 years' time, it's the same for your kids or your grandkids or for whoever it may be, your nieces, your nephews. They're going to say, you showed up authentically. That means I can show up authentically. It means we can all show up.
Right.
So, yeah, just to show up authentically and enjoy the ride, man, because it's a journey.
Mm-hmm.
Julie, last question. What is love?
I don't want to do the obvious thing, but I really want to sing Don't Hurt Me straight after. But I know you're going to get that a lot throughout this series, so I'm not going to do it.
I felt good, though.
I was so close to doing it. I was like, no, Julie, don't be basic.
Someone do it.
I'll let someone else do that one. But it was there. It was at the tip of my tongue.
It's in our heads now.
Yeah, I'm singing it. I am. That's why I'm not answering your question. Okay, what is love? You can't say the question without the next line. Okay. I've had... Craig, don't. Just record it after when you finish. Okay. Record a version. Okay. Do a cover.
Done.
I've had really, sorry, I'm going to swear, but fucking tough lessons in love over the last 2 years. Because I didn't, no one told me what it was, or no one's taught love. And no one, you know, no one teaches love. I don't know where to find and learn about it. It is literally something that you can only experience. Normally the person you're experiencing it with is also in that same process with you. And so you can't even confer with them because they're having a whole different version of what you're experiencing. So it can be a very lonely and isolated place. And I've had endless conversations about it, you know, learning about love for my parents and how that's changed over the years, to love for my brothers and how that's changed over the years, to love for myself and how that's changed to love for friends, and then to love for my partner, who, you know, him and I have been together 7 years, but a lot of those years has been hell on earth, guys. Like, actual hell on earth. You know, I've carried my 60-something inch TV into my bedroom because I didn't want to get out of bed, and balanced it on two IKEA chairs and watched the Travis Scott documentary and cried my eyes out for love. Wow. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just been, it has really been a crazy experience. But I think at the root of it, love is unconditional. And it is, I got this from Twitter, so shouts to Twitter. There's a guy who's been married for longer than he hadn't. And someone said, you know, what's the answer to it? And he said, perfect acceptance of an imperfect person. And that was the very first time I really understood it. I used to always try and work out how to get things right in love. Am I doing it right? You know, am I being the right type of girlfriend? Am I being the right type of sister? Am I making the right choices? And I'm trying to logically work out how to do it to then say and feel comfortable in saying that I love this person because I've done all the things right. So now I love them. I didn't understand that love was about acceptance, because the minute that you accept yourself, your mom, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your wife, you know, your nieces, the minute you accept these people for who they are, you can't help but love them, because everything that they do and everything that you experience with them is pure. And so you can take more from it in that moment than if you judge it. So yeah, love is acceptance. And it is genuinely, I heard people sing about it a lot when I was growing up and I never got it, but it is genuinely for me the most beautiful, it's not one emotion, the most beautiful set of emotions that you can ever experience whilst you are alive on earth.
That's wonderful.
And I wondered whether love is actually the answer to all these questions.
No, you know what? What you said was so powerful, Julie. Like, seriously, like, everything you, love isn't a thinky thing. It's not. It's experience. It's experience, isn't it? You feel it, and it's messy. Because falling, I've now can definitely see the difference between falling in love. That's that romantic stage.
Yes.
Intoxicating, like you're drunk, cool, yes. Boom. Wake up next morning, hangover, right.
It's a different version now, guys.
It's a different version of
We're doing thing. A different thing now. It's a whole next thing at this point.
It's a different flow. And at that point, do you still want to vibe with the person,
exactly,
or vibe in the situation? Do you still then? Because then that's acceptance for it. And then at that point, we can talk about love is almost like, is being able to understand it's imperfect.
Right.
It's a perfect imperfection. I mean, that's why, I mean, John Legend really kind of summed up so beautifully. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of me. Do you know what I mean? It was really, it's like, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. So love is messy, man. And it's never try and define it, because as soon as you do, it will clap you in your head when you least expect it, when you thought you knew what it
you
was.
You thought you was in. You thought you was lurking.
I thought I got the cheat code.
Bro, you bust the corner and it's hell. You're just looking at hell and you're in it. And you said, bro, what did I do wrong?
I didn't sign up for this one. You didn't. I thought you...
Yeah.
But do you accept me? Okay, cool. We'll ride through it. And are you laughing? If you can laugh in those dark times, it will get you through. You
exactly.
Know what I mean?
So is it the answer, Craig? Is love the answer?
Love is the answer.
I agree.
It is. It's the only
there
thing.
There you go.
I agree.
12 questions. We reached the answer. The perfect answer. I love finishing on love. Look at the three of us.
Come on.
Sat here. Summer of love. It's going to happen.
It's beautiful, man.
Guys, I'm so grateful for your answers and your wisdom and your enlightenment. And
thank you for having us. And congratulations on your album. Congratulations on your album. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Your album. Thank you, bro. I've learned a lot. I'm gonna say my takeaway is drinking more water, because Craig said how old he was, and I'm trying to be like Craig. Okay. Mm-mm. So I'm drinking more water. That's my takeaway. Okay. Actually, yes. What is your takeaway, Fraser? I'd love to know.
From this conversation today.
Yes.
Love is the answer.
Ah.
Yeah.
That's perfect. Yeah. And you, Craig, what's yours?
Make sure if you're going to put loads of bottles in a bag, do not carry it, because from what I've seen, it will give you problems, like real problems. Listen.
These guys are two of my favorite people on the planet right there. What I love about these 12 questions is that on one hand, they're going to prompt deep philosophical answers from the brilliant mind of Judy. Yet on the other, getting a story from Craig where he's trying to go in for a well-intentioned yet poorly executed hug with an old age pensioner right in the middle of lockdown. We all know the 2 meter rule, Craig, but you've contravened that. And what are you going to get? You're going to get some meringueing down the street from someone that's trying to back away from you. Absolutely priceless. If you haven't checked out already, check out 12 Questions by me, Fraser T. Smith, aka Future Utopia, available on all the major streaming services. And don't forget to subscribe and like this podcast. Also, ask yourself the 12 questions, ask other people the 12 questions. I put this record out to stir debate and hopefully create change. So why don't you send us your answers to the 12 questions on Instagram and Twitter at The Future Utopia. Last but not least, a massive shout out to Becky Voice at the Tape Agency, and my management crew, Phil, Kate, Jasmine and Josh at 360 for helping make this podcast happen. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time. And until then, let's make the future a utopia.